Hello, and welcome back to our podcast, Digital Technologies, where we discuss everything around technology and cyberspace. We are your hosts, Stephanie,
Zena,
Muna,
Daniela,
and Alexandra.
And today we discuss cybersecurity strategy and cyber architecture. To help us do that, we have a guest with us today. Please welcome to our podcast, Daniel Brunner. If you could introduce yourself and your company and what your field of expertise is, please.
First, thanks for having me. My name is Daniel Brunner. I work for a company called Timit, and that company is based in Switzerland. It's composed out of 16 consultants, which I'm one of, and we do any kind work of technical expertise that has to do with security, management, and project competence.
So, Daniel, we periodically hear of cyber attacks on big companies and the following consequences of that. So my question is, what kind of attacks must a company be able to defend itself against?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question to start even with at all. It's not an easy, like, one solution fits all way available. Even for these further discussions, I would like to give the heads up that I'm not able just to speak about my understanding, my view, and my biases that I collected throughout the years, but rather as well, would say, extend to as well the knowledge that I gather from my colleagues, speaking to them left and right, and their understanding on the world. So the kind of attacks what you should defend against is more composed on what kind of risks you inherently run with. So if you have a company, you have the classical CIA triad, so that's the confidentiality, the integrity, and the availability that you would like to have on the best excellence in your business on the day-to-day usage. You cannot run ahead and say, okay, my data needs to be secure. What can I do? Which kind of measurements can I put in place? Because the reality absolutely will be you have constraints. You will have a fixed budget, you will have fixed resources, you will have a fixed limitation on time where you can introduce it. Normally, the business is already running and you're like looped in later on, like, hey, by the way, we have this business, make it secure. That's how most often I entertain my clients, where I'm looped in once the business already is going. And then again, for the measurements, the other one is what I do with this kind of risk. So I can avoid that. Maybe I could reduce the risk again by putting in measurements or other things. I maybe could share the risks by outsourcing or transferring it. So really, the understanding is first, what is your business? How much of a risk can you even take? How much of budget and resources are left? And then you actually can start to say, okay, what kind of attacks do I really have to care about?
And we were also wondering, within your area of expertise and within your company, what are the most common types of attacks that you face or that you have to defend your clients against?
It's, of course, very hard to give a concrete answer, and that's for multiple reasons. One is, I absolutely will be biased by my clients and by the knowledge I get on. The other one is, what data are we talking about? Do we talk about the general feeling, right? Where we shouldn't be, because you're asking me a very concrete example, what are the most common type of attacks? And the fact is simply, we do not know. It still takes too often place that there are news about attacks many years ago, just recently discovered because it was an advanced persistent threat actor. Nevertheless, what we have done, we created a so-called threat landscape. And for this year, for 2022, we summed it up to five different type of attacks. First one, which is ransomware. I think we have seen this greatly this year again. We have high-end malware. I think this is more or less as well linked to the now war taking place in Ukraine. The human error misconfiguration that are taking place. We have such complex systems for end users even. The fourth type of attack will be key personnel unavailable. It's not an attack directly on the person, but you need to still see as a threat, right? The fifth one will be the internal fraud or sabotage. While it has been very difficult in a non-IT environment to gather lots of data and exfiltrate them, it has become very easy for anybody to move a million or 200 billion gigabyte of data. So ransomware, high-end malware, human error, key personnel, and internal fraud.
So today, almost every company or firm requires some sort of protection against attacks that you've just made us aware of in the cyberspace. So how do companies construct their defense? And are there any general procedures or some type of general cyber architecture to base themselves on?
There are some templates on which you can work by, and most companies already have it themselves and can be followed, I would say. What you need to be on the lookout for when you start to say, I just implement these types of defense, and I think it wouldn't hurt to have a good understanding on the process. And the process is mostly like on the implementation. Like you have some kind of understanding, hey, we have the need to secure the web front end through some technical measurements. We implement a web application firewall and other cool things, but it's not the whole story. The story goes further, because after the implementation, you need to understand, can you now verify that they are actually implemented? That's where one of the things already goes sideways. So you need to have something where you measure it against. So you need to be able to measure what you implement. And even if it's just a rough measurement by gut feeling, as I would say, which you have mostly when you train people, because the people you will not run around with numbers on the forehead, right? Like 60% understanding of this topic. No, that if you ask them, you have understood what I told you? Yes, yes, absolutely. And it will not be the reality. So people will lie to you. So it's not done by implementing the security measurements. It's trying to measure it. And once you have measured it, you probably identify gaps, again, the risks. And you have to go back then to see, okay, we have to repeat the whole risk assessment. Mostly that's annually done. And I mean the whole, again, because it has sometimes far-reaching consequences. Because maybe you believe, oh, this person is covered by a team, but a few months down the road, the team is completely overloaded by another 10 things that were implemented recently. So I really want to emphasize as well, like whatever you see on the technical side, that it's like really fancy, really outstanding, and can be implemented. And yeah, I think in this format, you have to go. So the type of defenses is not on a technological level. I think you have very fast a chance to understand what are your technological risks. But what you most often lack is a good process behind it that supports it actually, like long-term, again, not just on the spreadsheet that it looks very beautiful because now everything is green. It doesn't mean you're unhackable. It just means that your picture maybe is wrong.
Thanks very much for your answer. So my next question would be relating to that. Could you explain in brief terms what a general cybersecurity strategy would look like for a big international firm, for example?
So let's look at Microsoft. Microsoft is a company that's listed at the NASDAQ. Does it mean it's not international? No. Do you have multiple branches? No. Because you can have many branches these days, remote offices all over the globe. It's very hard to even have these classical guidelines, because in the past it was very easy to understand. You had a company branch in a country where you served exactly there your customers. This is like long time ago. That's nowhere at all anymore existing where I look around on new companies that are coming up on all the startups. What the reality is that the startup can support clients all over the world. What we have left is that you need to understand your size of the firm, and with that, the complexity. The bigger the company gets, the more likely it is that it has multiple different branches. So they need to make sure the whole advertising team has tools and people that are aware about these kind of cybersecurity risks after all. So I would say the big difference to a big international company, you can boil it down to your size and complexity. So the more complex business you will have, the more diverse your defense line will look like. If you have a very small company with 30 employees, you can do a top-down approach, but the bigger you become, the more diverse it will be. And with that, it stops the ability for you to do a real good top-down approach. So really, it's the challenge of how you interact with others, how you do the information flow, and how much of let's say, of a risk exposure internally, because you have to open up, how much that's already a thing in the company.
I would like to continue with the challenges and security issues that international companies are facing today. How complex is it to navigate the cybersecurity framework landscape?
The reality boils down to where the company headquarters is based. That will steer most of the discussions about which law you truly need to care for, which frameworks you even apply. Has a little bit to do with the legacy environment, what is being used. For Switzerland, I would say it's still the ISO standard. The other framework, which I would say, at least for now, is more up to date, is everything that comes out of the NIST, so National Institute of Standards and Technology, which is USA standards coming out. And there are two elements. It's the cybersecurity framework, the CSF, and it's really up to date in my opinion. And the other one is the special publication 800.6.3, which deals a bit more with the guidance of authentication and other elements. Another two are worthwhile to mention, FIPS, so that's the Federal Information Processing Standards 140. And the other one is the German one, BSI IT Grundschutz. Even I have a third one, sorry, PCI DSS, so the Payment Card Industry Data Security Standard, that's probably known to everybody which has a credit card. By this day and age, it's just outdated. You have different security measurements that you can put in place, which are more broadly to be used, at least in my opinion, and data at least backs it up. Speaking about different security measurements, you get your username or email address or whatever exposed and your password because somebody was shoulder surfing or something similar, right? And even passwords are not secure. We have all a mobile phone that we use these days, right? And when you type your password, you have a very refined mechanism because you do it out of your memory. And just by the vibrations, so by the sensors, by how the smartphone shakes, you can identify what you have typed before. So your passwords are not secure that moment where you type it in. So really, there are just too many things, too many advanced devices these days governing this. So that's the reason why it's good if you know even standards that are a little bit out of date, because again, it opens your eyes what actually has changed in the world of security.
Thank you very much for your complete answers. We've now seen the major implications of cybersecurity strategies, as well as key regulation shaping this field. The final question would be more future-facing. That is, what do you see today that is going to influence the future of cybersecurity strategies, and how can your company react to them?
It already became apparent when the new EU GDPR, which governs your data privacy elements in the EU, came in place for two reasons. One was it suddenly became a thing for all EU-based companies that they have to enforce it, which made it much more complex to actually implement for international companies. One thing it will be more and more coming is the laws that govern where your data resides and who has actually access to it. But shown with laws that are already in place, Russia since many years, like for telecommunications, you're not allowed to have some kind of encryption in place. I knew this because I had to, in a previous job, to make sure some installments for video and telephony systems are in place. And I was told, hey, no encryption here by law. And I was shocked. Again, it was the first time that I encountered something like this. And EU now has discussions about chat controls. Like they can read your chats, all of it, like plain text for them available. So the thing that really will change, make and do your world are the new laws. So yeah, I would say biggest change that will come is not actually from any hackers. It's not coming from the companies itself. It's not coming from the clients. I would say it's the law, at least for the next 2 to maybe 5 years.
Great. Thank you very much. It's interesting because we heard about RGPD in for ESG, for example, and sustainability. But it's also great to hear that it's also going to have an effect on cybersecurity. So thank you very much for your time and for according us so much detail and specific knowledge.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me and have a wonderful afternoon.
That was Digital Technologies Podcast with an episode on cyber strategy and architecture with special guest Daniel Brunner. Catch us next Wednesday for a new episode, and until then, have a great week.